And now it's the opinion page, the American dream. Broadly defined, it's the belief that if we work hard, we'll get ahead, that things will be better for our kids. And you can argue that more than democracy, more than anything, really, our collective belief in that dream both defines us as a nation and binds us together. Now, a new ABC Yahoo News poll reports that only half of us believe it. Los Angeles Times columnist Gregory Rodriguez writes, "With the glue of the dream holding at 50%, it's nothing to cheer about. And if that number falls further, it could pose as great a menace as any outside enemy." So how do you define the American dream, and has it changed? Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. You can find a link to his column as well there. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Columnist Gregory Rodriguez, also a senior fellow at the New America Foundation, with us today from NPR West in Culver City, California. Nice to have you back on the program.
Thanks, as always, for having me.
And the American dream, what we hear, you know, work hard, get ahead, your kids do. What did it mean in your family? How did that manifest itself?
In my family, I think it meant exactly that. I mean, it meant that my generation would be better than my parents. I don't know if that actually came about. But it's just, I think in different families interpret it in different ways, and it's this vague notion of betterment over time, and different generations actually reinterpret it. Some people see it as a spiritual aspect, life living better lived. Some people see it as a material concept of life better lived materially, bigger houses, bigger cars. But I think over time we're going to have to recalibrate what it means, what the American dream means, if we're going to stay together as a nation.
Why is it the thing that that the glue, as you called it? Why is it that?
Well, I mean, if you imagine sort of freedom being sort of the ideological force behind the American experiment, and democracy, let's say it's the operating system, then the source of the glue, the social cohesion, is that dream. It's what really, as if we're, whatever indignities we may be suffering at any given moment, we'll put it aside. We won't resort to violence. We won't give up hope. We won't sort of lead to the behaviors that'll shatter a society because we hope that things will get better. The great diversity that this country's always struggled with, we could have done worse over time if people hadn't had that sense of moving forward. I think it's the one thing that takes this hyper-individualism, these millions of competing separate dreams, and puts them together in a collective enterprise. It is, as I see it, the glue. It is really odd, actually, when you think about it, this amazing nation, this extraordinarily powerful nation that rests upon this nebulous, this nebulous ephemeral notion that things will get better, whatever that means.
And better for us individually and better for us collectively.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, but oddly, I think it's a very personal, and that's what, again, I think you're pointing at something really interesting. It's a very personal thing, that dream, but it's what connects our personal dreams with, again, the collective enterprise.
And it's interesting, you note in your column that this is not necessarily connected with the Great Recession.
Well, exactly. I think the numbers and the poll that you cited may indeed be about widening inequality and joblessness. But what I found interesting, that you could start to see this before the Great Recession. In 2006 CNN poll, you start to see people saying, oh, well, maybe this dream isn't achievable. And even more importantly, in the booming 90s, another poll seemed to indicate that, wait a second, Americans didn't think it was achievable, that the dream was less achievable than it had been 10 years prior, and they projected that it was going to be more difficult as time went on. Now, that may be simply a function of subjectivity, of people reinterpreting the dream. And Greg Easterbrook wrote in an article that it wasn't enough in the 90s to keep up with the Joneses, that somehow you had to get better than the Joneses. So it was the dream on hyperdrive that made it untenable.
And it's interesting, again, as you look at the inside some of the numbers in this most recent poll, as you might suspect, those who are better off, those who are college educated, tend to be those who think the American dream is still alive. While those, Gregory, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
I just lost you.
Okay, there we go. I was saying there are some demographic differences, that those who are better educated, those who are better off, think that the American dream still is alive.
Absolutely. I mean, but what's interesting about that data is, the first data is like, okay, yes, better educated, higher income, believe in dream, that seems to make sense. But underneath all the data, and I wish it were better, it wasn't really disaggregated, but that non-whites are still bigger believers in the dream than whites. We don't know what that means because the pollsters hadn't disaggregated the data. Maybe we can get to it later. But maybe that's again, maybe that comes from a different set of expectations. And we do seem to know that the immigrant experience still has the American dream, that there is the ability to go up. It doesn't mean they're getting to the middle class in any fast way. But there does seem to be the ability to jump significantly in one's own eyes and one's own trajectory, and from the certain poverty of arrival to a certain even working class to lower middle class status. So the American dream exists on some levels, but the question is, will it exist for the middle? And if it doesn't, how do we recalibrate it, and what do we do to keep from tearing each other apart? Because there does seem to be some fraying. I mean, as I say in the column, in the end, I think the center is holding. Enough people believe in the dream. But the incivility that we're seeing, the fractiousness of our political life, the nativism that we're seeing right now, it's a very angry country. But yet the anger has not spilled into a sort of violence that'll tear the fabric of the country yet.
As you pointed out, tarring and feathering is an expression. Didn't used to be.
Well, you know, I was whining and moaning and whining several months ago about the terrible column, the comments in newspapers, and particularly against my columns. and a colleague in New York reminded me, you know, tarred and feathered is just a metaphor nowadays. A couple hundred years ago, people did it in reality. And I don't know why, but that made me feel better.
800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. We're talking with Gregory Rodriguez about the American dream. What does it mean to you? How do you define it? What does it mean in your family? We'll start with Wendy, and Wendy with us from Atlanta.
Hi. I just had a comment. I was really surprised to hear that the statistics are showing that whites who are better educated are feeling more like the dream is still alive. I've had the opposite experience that, you know, we were always brought up in my family. We're a very multicultural family, and that if you work hard, if you do the right thing, if you care about each other and you're respectful and you care about the environment, everything will work out. You'll improve your circumstances and those of other people, and it's just not panned out. I think I feel more akin to the children of the 60s and the great disillusionment they wound up having with the kind of flower child movement than people my own generation, because I did all of the right things. I worked in high school. I went to college. I worked hard. I made great grades. I got full scholarships. And I am 35 years old and not able to find employment where I can afford to pay my mortgage. So it's very, like, I feel very disillusioned with America and the American ideals, where you almost feel lost and like you grew up in a culture where you were just kind of fed a load of malarkey and lied to. It was almost like when you find out that Santa Claus doesn't really exist.
That's a sad statement, Wendy. To some degree, obviously different people defined it differently, but in the 60s, a lot of that was a rejection of crass materialism, and that was available, however. They just chose to reject it. In your case, saying doing all the hard work and it's simply not there, the promises have been broken. That's something different, and that's a little more dispiriting, I think.
It is, and I find that a lot of my kind of compatriots, people who grew up in similar family circumstances, who grew up in similar educational environments, are all kind of feeling this same way, that a lot of them did all the right things. They, you know, quote unquote, correct things. They made the right decisions. They were good to other people, and they find that they're lost, or that the opportunities that they expected to be there are not there. And it is. It's very sad to see that reflection. It could just be the area that we live in. And
sure.
Georgia, of course, is not doing very well as far as employment goes. But it is very sad to have a higher education and you know, come from a particular background.
And let me just bring Gregory in here. I think what she's saying is exactly why it is corrosive when that number goes
precisely,
down.
Precisely. She's getting at the heart of it. That the disillusionment, the sense of being lied to, the sense that it doesn't pay to play, what she said, to do the right things. And what do people do when they feel that it's no longer pays off to do the right thing, they no longer do the right thing. And those are the type of behaviors, the type of sort of angry voting, the type of sort of dismantling a system you no longer believe in. This is precisely pointing to the potential dangers when enough people don't believe. We tend to treat the dream as some sort of a trope. It is. It's a cliche. But how can this country be based on this really nebulous notion that's so personal and intimate? And she actually compared it to Santa Claus. And yet it's powerful, as we can see. And so the fear is that enough people will feel lied to, will lose their faith in government, and therefore then behave in ways that are do not contribute to the cohesion of the nation.
So are you studying anarchism, Wendy?
Not quite. As a matter of fact, it's funny that you brought that up, because those are discussions that my husband and I have had together, that so often people, for instance, you think about, and of course, thank God it's not this bad, but Nazi Germany. How does something like that happen? How does a group of people in any capacity have any inkling that some of those atrocities were going on and not get together and rally and say, we will not stand for this? How bad do things have to get? How disillusioned do people have to be? What circumstances have to be in place? And it's really interesting. I come from a psychological background, and in every freshman psychology class that talks about the studies where, you know, these group of people pretend to be inmates and these group of people pretend
yes, that famous experiment, yeah.
Exactly. And, of course, all the freshmen say, that would never happen nowadays. you would never have that happen. Or, you know, the studies where they thought they were shocking someone to death.
Right.
Oh, that would never happen nowadays. But, yes, it would. In the right set of circumstances, yes, you would. You would shock someone to death just because somebody told you to. You would. With the right circumstances, you would. And that's very frightening, because you would like to – I would like to think of myself as caring. I would like to think of myself as altruistic, of – you know, having a good sense of community and love for my fellow people just because they are my fellow people. But when do you get to a circumstance where you stop feeling that way because you feel like you are in a position where your whole focus of your being is just surviving?
Wendy, we wish you the best of luck. Thank you very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
On the opinion page this week, we're talking with Gregory Rodriguez. He wrote the column in today's Los Angeles Times, The American Dream, Is It Slipping Away? You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go next to Kevin. Kevin with us from Coopersville in Michigan.
Hello.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi. I just wanted to make a quick comment. I graduated about a year and a half from college, so the dream's kind of going away for me. I haven't been able to find work. I've been married for a little over a year. I'd like to be able to have kids, pass the dream on to them, but it's, like I said, without being able to even afford to have kids, it just seems harder and harder.
And so do you have faith that with hard work, if you can find it, things will be better for you and your kids?
I'm hoping so. I work every day to find a job. I made more money 10 years ago before I even went to college. It's like I make less money now than after I spent $30,000 on college. So
May I ask a question?
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin, I mean, what does it mean then to be an American if that dream doesn't, if you don't believe in it? I mean, what does it mean?
I'm not really sure what it means. I'd like to hope that it can still come true. I mean, I suppose it could mean that everything's totally different and just have to try to find a way to get along. But I'd like to think that growing up, you think back in the 50s and 60s, you had even just to get a high school education, you can still get a good job and afford a house and mortgage payments and family. But like I said, even with a college education, it's pretty unattainable. Maybe it's just because I live in Michigan. When there's no
things are very tough in Michigan, as you obviously know better than I do, Kevin. But
yeah,
we wish you the best of luck, Kevin.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Thanks for the call. Here's an email from Lisa. I see the American dream in Oprah Winfrey. Look at what she was able to do, where she came from, and where she is now. Also, the Arnold Schwarzenegger story. Came to the country with no language, with a goal to make movies. Not only did he do that, he married into a large political family, now the head of a state. The American dream is the ability to be able to do what you want to work for. And that's part of it, too.
I would say, though, as a Californian, that our governor is downwardly mobile at this point.
Well, the American Dream has a higher popularity rating than he does.
Yeah, a little editorializing there.
Jonathan in Connecticut writes, I'd argue smart, not hard work, pays off. The man who makes 10 times what I make doesn't work 10 times as hard. I wonder if this American dream perpetuates the growing division between the haves and the have-nots, or rather, let me ask Gregory Rodriguez whether the lack of faith reflects the growing gap between the wealthy and everybody else.
I don't think it's a reflection. I don't think the gap is a reflection of the lack of faith. But and the gap itself isn't necessarily the problem in and of itself. It's the gap and the widening gap and the inability and the belief that you can't close that gap. So it's not inequality in and of itself. It's the belief that inequality is simply not conquerable, and that's when things start and beliefs start to corrode.
And getting back to your family, you're a columnist. You work at a think tank. You've done pretty well. Your parents are, I'm sure, proud of you.
Oh well, thank you. I'm sure they are. But you know, to make it personal, I grew up in a house, and my parents were teachers. I don't usually talk about such things. My parents were teachers in the 1960s, LA Unified School District and the LA Community College District, and they bought a house that I would never be able to afford on a teacher's salary. So, to a certain extent, as a Southern Californian, as a suburban Southern Californian, I was very conscious that I was downwardly mobile, at least economically, from a very early age. But again, on a personal level, I think I recalibrated that what I wanted was not to have my parents' jobs, and I wanted more freedom. So did I achieve a dream in some sense that my parents didn't? Yes, and their stability, I think, allowed me to be a useless intellectual type. But yes, I was very conscious of being downwardly mobile at a very young age.
Look, the newspaper business, it's going to take off any day. Gregory Rodriguez, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Gregory Rodriguez writes a column for the Los Angeles Times. He's also a senior fellow at the New America Foundation. There's a link to his column at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. With us today from Culver City, California, and the studios of NPR West. Tomorrow, we'll talk about the changing roles of men and women. Maybe that has something to do with this, too. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.